What's going on? Happy Friday. Nick Kirby here. Welcome to Chatterbox Reds, proudly sponsored by DSC Commodities. Well, the Reds and Brewers game on Thursday was rained out. It will be made up on Friday, August 30th, as part of a split doubleheader. The Reds are just going to skip Thursday's starting pitcher, Nick Martinez, and keep their scheduled starters for the weekend. No official word, but you'd assume that Martinez will be available in the bullpen for at least the next couple days. Well, coming up in just a minute, I talked with Elijah Evans of Just Baseball. He covers the White Sox and the White Sox prospects. He'll help us preview the Reds' upcoming series in Chicago against the White Sox starting on Friday night. But first, I want to tell you about our proud sponsor, and that is, of course, Deep South Commodities. DSC is a leader in renewable commodities for biofuel production. They specialize in used cooking oil collection, aggregation, and sales. Visit www.deepsouthcommodities.com for more information. Thanks, as always, to our friends at DSC. Well, the only NL Central team in action on Thursday was the Pittsburgh Pirates, and they lost 5-1 to the Phillies. So that puts your NL Central standings as follows. Pirates at 9-4, Brewers 8-3, Cubs 7-5, Reds 6-6, and the Cardinals are 6-7. All right, well, let's go ahead and jump right into my conversation with Elijah Evans, previewing this upcoming series against the Chicago White Sox. Stick around at the end. I'll give you some more news and notes about the Reds and the White Sox for this upcoming series, and also tell you about some of the Reds minor league action from Thursday night. All right, pleased to be joined by Elijah Evans of JustBaseball.com. We've had Elijah on several times before. He is a White Sox fan who does a really good job covering the White Sox minor league system. I thought this would be a great time to bring on Elijah to kind of preview the Reds' upcoming series against the White Sox. White Sox come in 2-10. Not the most vibes, I'd say. Probably, you correct me if I'm wrong here, this 2024 White Sox team probably feels almost identical to where the 2022 Reds were, where there was a lot of discontent with the ownership, trying to rebuild, trying to get some prospects through their system. Is that fair to say?
That is completely fair to say, Nick. Even more, I'd say it might be even worse, to be honest with you. But at the same time, there is also some future that I see, at least compared to most people, I think. Like the Reds were in those shoes, right? I think 2023 was better than you guys expected it to be for the Reds. And I see 2025 being a potential growth year. This year is not going to be pretty, though, that's for sure.
Did things kind of turn for you at the trade deadline last year when the White Sox made some moves? Obviously, I feel like the one move that stands out the most was when you guys completely fleeced the Angels on the Giolito trade. That's kind of where things really shifted in your mind, gave you a little bit more confidence.
I mean, in all honesty, I think last offseason it became clear that there was definitely something off with the current core. It didn't feel like it was going to go anywhere necessarily. But then midseason last year, that was kind of the flip switch where it was like, all right, we're going to move some guys. We're going to focus on the farm system. I love the way they drafted last year. I love the trades at the deadline. I mean, the Giolito is one trade that was great, but the Lance Lynn trade to the Dodgers was a steal as well. There was some great pickups. I mean, even just some smaller trades as well that were made at the deadline. Generally speaking, that was kind of the flip switch where it was like, all right, this team is going to really suck in 2024, but the farm system's in a better place than it's been in 5+ years. So that was kind of the switch of things. And, you know, it's as frustrating as it is right now to watch, there's at least, there feels like there's more of a direction than there was for much of last year.
All right, let's kind of run through the pitchers that the Reds will see this weekend. We'll start Friday night. Chris Flexen, kind of a journeyman pitcher, had some good moments with the Mariners, trying to reestablish himself. Is he just kind of that fill-in guy right now, or is there any upside?
I would, if it was my choice, he would not be in the rotation tomorrow. So he's there. He's on a 1-year deal. Sooner than later, there's 3 or 4 pitching prospects knocking on the door. So I expect him to get bumped into a bullpen role and or DFA'd in the next month or two. So it's fine. That's a game the Reds should be able to hit him for sure. He's had a few good moments. He had a few nice starts in the spring, I think, where I was like, oh, this guy looks like he could be at least, you know, a serviceable 5-starter, right? But really, ultimately, he's a true stopgap in the sense of the world, where he's going to be here for a few months at most, probably.
Saturday afternoon, the Reds will see Garrett Crochet, probably the pitcher you're most excited about on this rotation.
by far. Crochet is awesome, man. I remember when he got drafted and he came up as a reliever, he debuted like a few months after getting drafted. He was one of those guys where it was like instant floor as a reliever, right? And we saw him in 2022 be a really solid reliever. And then last year he dealt with injuries. He was on and off the IL. He struggled in the few games he pitched. He only threw like 13 innings, right? And then this offseason, there was all this talk about Crochet's preparing to be a starter and he's building up his arm and all this stuff. And I was skeptical, honestly, as a guy who's loved Crochet for a while. I was like, I don't know if this dude can just step into being a starter after throwing like a total of 80 professional innings over the past 2.5 years, right? And here we are, and the dude has been nasty. Led the league in strikeouts through his first three starts, or up until a few days ago. He just got passed, but you know, was leading the league in strikeouts a few days ago. Really just dominant stuff from Crochet. His command is excellent. It was a guy who used to struggle with command. Now he's 21 strikeouts, one walk in his first three starts. You know, these are his first three big league starts, right? It's pretty crazy to see, honestly. That's been, of all the negatives of a 2-10 team, right? Crochet has been the shining star of the White Sox so far this season. And you know, his innings are going to be the big issue with him, right? So I think last start he got pulled after five innings, even though he definitely had more in the tank, because you know, you don't want to overdo a guy who's never been a starter, right? So I think this is a game where if the Reds can put something on him early, right, I could see him only going, you know, five or so innings, just because they are trying to ease his innings a little bit. But you know, really, really electric stuff, and that is the one game that I can see the White Sox winning, simply because of Crochet's dominance so far.
Well, pretty fun pitching matchup on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, that's a good one. Lodolo.
Nick Lodolo going to make his season debut. So that'll definitely be a fun game to watch. And then on Sunday, rounding it out, Michael Soroka. Obviously, he was one of the best pitchers in baseball back in 2019. Just had some really unfortunate injuries, off to a slow start. Is he in the flexing camp, or do you actually see some upside there?
No, I don't have him in the flexing camp at all. Also not the Crochet camp, right? Somewhere in that middle ground, I'd say. I actually think he's gotten pretty unlucky so far. The 6.14 ERA is a little bit misleading. He's had a few pretty solid games where he's just kind of ended up missing a few spots in one inning, and kind of one inning just unraveled on him to a degree, right? So I think he has shown me a lot of pretty solid things. He looked really good in the spring. And even in his last start, right? Like, he had a few innings where he looked really good, and then it was just like, oh, kind of something got away from him, and he ended up having a blow-up inning, right? And then, you know, last game it was one big home run that cost him. Kind of all three of his starts, he's ended up, most of his runs have come off of big home runs, right? So generally speaking, I think he is someone who I wouldn't be surprised to see him kind of have a better start, because I think he's due for a little bit better of a start. Definitely some issues still. The command is still shaky. He's having trouble locating his breaking balls a lot so far this season. So kind of up and down for Soroka, but like you said, like, the dude is talented. I think everybody knows the dude's talented, right? And it's been a long time coming for him, kind of 3-4 years trying to get back to the pitcher he used to be, right? And he's not there yet. But I do see some upside with Soroka, where I think he could put together a solid start on any given day. And I hope that he can bounce back from his last one, which was kind of his worst of the season so far, probably.
All right, shifting gears over to the offense. Obviously, the Reds catching a huge break without Luis Robert. Going to be out about 2 months. He's really the whole offense, right?
Well, and Eloy and Moncada. So you've got the three guys that were kind of the core, per se, of the you know, the 2021 White Sox team, right? Are all already injured within 2 weeks of the season, which is kind of just the story of the White Sox over the last 3 years, right? So generally speaking, the lineup is probably the worst in baseball right now, I think. I don't think that's really a stretch. I think until the last 2 days, like the last two games against Cleveland, they put together something. So that's, I guess, a sign going forward. There's a little more life there. But generally speaking, this is a lineup that is just has, I don't know. I don't think it's crazy to say like no positive players on it right now, which is, I know that's really negative of me, but you know, Gavin Sheets has been weirdly good. It's a guy who's kind of been on that, like, oh, maybe he could be something for the last few years, and he really hasn't taken the step. But then this year he's been really good through 2 weeks. I've seen some swing adjustments with him, and he's hitting 3-4 now in the lineup with those guys hurt. That's one guy that's been solid. You know, beyond that, it really is a pretty poor lineup, all things considered, and a lineup that, you know, later in the year is going to be infused with some young prospects. But right now it's a pretty hard watch on the offensive side of the ball. We'll see what happens. But I don't think it's not a great matchup as well, considering the Sox, a lot of the guys who are hitting right now with Sheets, and even if you look at some of the vets like a Benintendi or a Dominic Fletcher, who has some upside and has been solid lately, those are lefties, right? So facing, you know, a heavy lefty Reds matchup for this weekend is also something that they probably will struggle with as well.
You beat me to that. I was going to ask you about that, having to to face Abbott and Lodolo in this series.
Exactly. I think they'll struggle against the lefties because Sheets is being, if you look at Sheets as the kind of the top offensive production guy so far, and then in the last few games, at least Dominic Fletcher has looked really good. And it's one guy I'm excited to watch because he's young, but both those guys have struggled a lot against lefties in their career so far. So it'll be tough. I think Abbott is in for a really nice start actually. And I think if Lodolo is going to have having to make a first start of the season off an injury, right? That's kind of the best team he could possibly be facing this weekend, to be honest.
I did see that Eloy Jimenez may be activated tomorrow.
Could be. Yeah, I heard there's a chance because it seems like they sent down Colas. So it's either going to be Jimenez or it's going to be Max Stassi, who's the catcher, who's our kind of backup catcher who was hurt to start the season. So I think one of those two is going to get activated tomorrow. Maybe somebody else will be coming up, but I based on the transaction logs, I think one of those two will be back tomorrow.
Where are you at on Eloy Jimenez? I think he's kind of become a polarizing player. Is that fair
to say? Polarizing is one word. I would say just more kind of loathed by White Sox fans at this point. I think the dude is, I have nothing but respect for him. I think I hate the concept of like people just bashing on him because he's always hurt. I think that's just, it's unfair and it's unfortunate, right? Like nobody wants to be injured. And the guy is clearly someone who works hard. I got to talk to him in Arizona this spring and it's like, you can see he just wants to play baseball. Like it's very apparent to me. Just unfortunately, like his body has just not been there and he hasn't been able to stay healthy for 5 years now, right? So I'm at the point where, you know, he has a team option at the end of the season. I think it's about time his White Sox career is over. Unfortunately, I have no hatred towards him. I wish him the best and I hope he's able to find a career somewhere and figure out how to stay healthy. But at the end of the day, like he hasn't been healthy for five straight seasons and you really just can't pay a player who hasn't been healthy for five straight seasons, regardless of his upside, because we know Eloy, I mean, when he was a prospect, right, he was hitting 500 foot home runs and he was one of the top 20 prospects in baseball and he was coming up and showed that as a 23 year old in 2019, he was like a borderline all-star. I think he just missed the all-star game that year. Right. So it was like, he has plenty of talent. Unfortunately, I just think his White Sox career is going to be coming to an end this season.
You expect to probably get traded at the deadline?
If you could find a trade for him, I think unfortunately he has an option with a buyout too. So with a $3 million buyout, or I think it's a $4 million buyout, I believe there are three or four. So when you have a buyout on a guy who you know, again, is not been on the field at all consistently for five straight seasons, right? Like ideally you trade him at the deadline and you get something for him if he's hitting well over the next 2 months. But there's also a world where I think they just have to hold him for the season and then decline his option and say, you know, this didn't work out, unfortunately.
The Game Time app is now an authorized ticket marketplace of Major League Baseball, which makes getting tickets even faster and easier. Prices on the Game Time app actually go down the closer that it gets to first pitch. And the Reds will be back in town next weekend, hosting Mike Trout and the Angels. Then they got a big four-game series against the Angels right after that. So be sure to use the Game Time app if you're looking for tickets for that game. Also, FC Cincinnati. Everywhere you want to get concert tickets, they have tickets for just about everything. And with killer last-minute deals, all-in pricing, views from your seats, and the lowest price guaranteed, Game Time takes the guesswork out of buying MLB tickets. My personal favorite feature of the Game Time app is the seat layout. It shows you exactly the price all around the stadium in each section in a very clean, easy, friendly way. They have all-in pricing. You can toggle this feature. It shows you the total up front with no surprise fees at checkouts. The lowest price guaranteed, or Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app today, create an account, and use the code CINCY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account, redeem the code CINCY, C-I-N-C-Y, for $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed. One player I did want to ask you about that was intriguing to me as I was kind of digging through is Corey Lee. He's the backup catcher. I think they had him DH the last game against a lefty, a guy that had a pretty good, was a pretty highly rated prospect coming up.
Yeah.
Hasn't really got a lot of MLB experience. What do you think about him?
Yeah, Corey Lee's an interesting guy, actually. I think, you know, when he was acquired last year, in my mind, it was like, oh, this guy could be a backup catcher. I don't think he's, you know, he's not a star catcher. He doesn't profile as someone who's going to be like a stud catching wise. But ultimately, you know, he has been pretty good in his limited amount of games so far. It looks like he's made some adjustments to his swing. I think last year when he got a chance with the Sox, he was super swing happy. He was chasing at everything, trying to just hit the ball out, and it just wasn't working for him. And then this year you see kind of a more nuanced approach with him, and I'm glad he's getting an opportunity to actually get some at-bats, because I like I said, I don't think he's a long-term star catcher. But at the same time, I think he's could be a really solid backup, if not even a platoon catcher, if everything clicks for him. So I'm excited to see him get some more at-bats. I think right now is the perfect time to do it, right? Like you don't have Jimenez there, at least for now. So you have a DH spot that's open. You know, Martin Maldonado is apparently works really well with the pitchers, right? But he's obviously not part of the future. So I think Corey Lee is someone that I'm happy is getting some at-bats finally. And I think, you know, he looks much better than he did last year when he was up. So I think he's a player that I'm definitely happy to see in the lineup, and I want to see in the lineup more, just to see what we got with him as going into next year, you know.
One last offensive player. I have to ask you about Andrew Benintendi, just simply because he's a local Cincinnati guy. He has had two really rough years back to back. His power is just almost completely evaporated. This guy got several years left on his contract too, right?
Yeah, no, it was 5-year contract, $75 million. The biggest contract in White Sox history, believe it or not. So pretty rough, man. Benny looks terrible, to be honest with you. He just has not looked like the same player that he was, you know, 4 or 5 years ago when he was in Kansas City, and even when he was bouncing around a little bit, when he was in Boston earlier in his career, right? I don't see much there, man. Honestly, he really just looks kind of lost at the plate. It's just constant ground balls sort of, and no power. Like you said, there's really very minimal juice at all over the last year or two with him. And unfortunately, like that contract, right? 3 more years of Benintendi's contract is going to be hard to move. I think he's the type of player you'd want to trade and just continue to reset the clock, but you signed him to a 5-year deal. Kind of, he was signed at the time where he was supposed to be kind of a key piece added to the competitive core of this team, but that competitive core is completely gone at this point, right? Like that core of players is no longer existent. So it's unfortunate. When he was signed, I was kind of neutral on it. I would say I didn't dislike it, but I didn't love it. But I was also like, you know, he fills a role. He should be some speed, a little bit of power, a little bit of defense, right? Right now it's really not much of anything that he's giving the White Sox. So, you know, he starts in left field, right? He's going to be the left fielder for probably at least another few years, unless there's a trade for him eventually. But right now it's like, he's got to figure some things out, because he is the highest paid player on the team, or second highest paid, I think, behind Moncada. And is someone who's like expected to be one of the guys, and is far from being one of the guys right now. So it's unfortunate for him. I hope he kind of figures some things out, but it hasn't been pretty.
All right. Lastly, just quickly go through the bullpen. Michael Kopech, the closer, off to a great start this year, has all the talent in the world. Can't believe Brian Shaw is still in Major League Baseball. I would have never guessed that. Is there anyone else in that bullpen, or is it just really just all thrown together?
Yeah, so Kopech is great. I think I've been preaching for him to get moved to the bullpen for like a year and a half now, and I'm so glad they finally did it this offseason, because it was unfortunately not working out as a starter for him. He really struggled last year, and he just couldn't stay consistent, and his velo was down a ton. Now you put him in a bullpen role where you say, hey, Michael, you're going to throw max 2 innings any given day. Dude was sitting 101 the other day. I was like, wow, there's the Michael Kopech we saw as a prospect, and it's unfortunate it didn't work as a starter, but this guy looks like he could legitimately be the closer for a long time in Chicago, which is super exciting to see, because ultimately, yes, you want starting pitchers and you want your talented pitchers starting, but I'd take a dominant closer over a borderline 5 starter any day of the week, right? So I'm glad to see him breaking out. And then another guy, mostly just scrap together veteran guys. That's kind of the bullpen right now. It's a lot of vets, but Jordan Leisure is someone that I have to mention, because he's a friend of mine, and also somebody who's just an awesome dude. Is a rookie this season, came over from the Dodgers last year in that Lance Lynn trade that I mentioned earlier. In his rookie campaign so far, you know, he's got 4 games, 4 1/3 innings, no runs allowed. He's got some powerful stuff. He's got a really impressive fastball slider combination. So he kind of, I hope, is going to become that setup man ahead of Kopech right now, actually, and has looked like very clearly the second best reliever in the bullpen so far. So Leisure is a guy that I'm pumped to see. I'm happy for him. He's a great dude. And then the rest of the bullpen is pretty much just a bunch of scrap together vets. But those two are awesome. I think those two could be a bullpen duo for a long time, actually.
All right. Well, this has been fantastic, Elijah. Appreciate you coming on as always, giving us a great preview of the White Sox. We'll catch up again soon, maybe a little later when you've saw a little sounds bit great. More minor league action for some sure. of the Reds affiliates.
For sure. That sounds great, Nick. I appreciate you having me on. It's always a good time.
All right, let's get you caught up on some Reds minor league action. Both Louisville and Chattanooga were both rained out. Chattanooga lookouts, really tough start for them. They've already had three rainouts on the young season. Dayton Dragons, they lost 8-4 to Cedar Rapids. Dragons now 3-3 on the year, but some really good offensive performances. Sal Stewart, 2-for-4 with a double. Saw a little bit of this game. Had a really, really good piece of hitting in this game. Cam Collier, he was also 2-for-4. Collier now has a hit in all six of his games to start his time in Dayton. Remember, he just got promoted at the beginning of this year. Cam Collier hitting .385 with a .923 OPS. Ethan O'Donnell was also 2-for-4. Hector Rodriguez, Leo Balcazar, Carlos Oria, and Cade Hunter, however, they were all 0-for-4. The Daytona Tortugas, they won a thriller, 8-7 over Palm Beach. Tortugas now 3-3 on the season. Tortugas, in fact, scored three runs on two homers in the bottom of the ninth for their walk-off win. Trey Faltine hit a two-run homer to tie it, and then Dominique Pitelli hit the walk-off home run. Only top prospect in action, Ricardo Cabrera was 2-for-5. Alfredo Duno, Carlos Sanchez, and Eastmith Pineda, they all had the night off. All right, let's look a little bit more into this Reds-White Sox series, and we talked a lot with our guy Elijah Evans about this, and he gave us a great preview. But let's just quickly run through the starting pitching matchups again for the series. Friday, that's tonight, 7:40 p.m. start time. Andrew Abbott going up against Chris Flexen. More on that individual matchup later on. Saturday, it'll be a 2:10 start. Very weird start time for Saturday for the Reds. Nick Lodolo making his first start for the Reds since May 6th of last year. Really looking forward to that. And going up in a great pitching matchup against Garrett Crochet, who we talked about. Probably the most exciting player on the White Sox right now. And then Sunday's also a 2:10 start time. Graham Ashcraft, who's really struggled against the White Sox last year, got absolutely rocked. Also had a rough outing in spring. Hopefully he can turn it around going up against the former All-Star high Cy Young vote getter and finished second in the Rookie of the Year voting, Michael Soroka. Well, the White Sox, they come in just 2-10 on the season. They've lost all four of the series they've played. They were actually swept in a four-game series last weekend at the Kansas City Royals. They were outscored 20-5 in the four games. Already been a brutal, it's been a brutal offseason as they're, you know, White Sox are in a rebuild, but they've also had a brutal first couple weeks of the season. Lost their best player, Luis Robert, for 2+ months, and Yoan Moncada is probably out for the season. It is possible Eloy Jimenez might return off the IL this weekend against the Reds. They haven't given any official word on that as I record this. The one player off to a great start for them is Gavin Sheets. He's hitting .333, two home runs, OPS over 1,100. But they have a lot of struggling hitters, probably headlined by Andrew Benintendi, just hitting .149 to start the season. White Sox, they lost 101 games last year. That was their most since 1970. They fired their vice president and their GM. They hired the 39-year-old at the time, he's now 40, Chris Getz. He played all the way up to 2014. So they have a really young front office. They're kind of similar to the Reds, as I talked about with Elijah. Probably very similar to the Reds were in 2022. They're stressing dynamic players during their rebuild. Specifically, the quote was, they wanted players that do something other than hitting a bunch of home runs. Also, some little bit of maybe a toxic situation with the White Sox and their owner, Jerry Reinsdorf. They want them to sell the team. They're also in a battle trying to get public funding for a new stadium. Ironically, they're kind of fighting with the Bears for some of that state funding money, but that's a whole nother story. White Sox, they are projected to lose 98 games by Pecota. That is the most in the American League, actually one more than the Oakland A's this season. White Sox have been a team that has owned the Reds throughout their history since we started interleague play. Reds is 10-23 all time. They're just 2-8 all time in Chicago against the White Sox. They've never won a series in Chicago. They'd split a series in 1998. Reds lost 2-3 to the White Sox last year. Lost 3-4 to the White Sox in 2021. They lost the game 17-4 last year against the White Sox. So hopefully this is the time Reds can turn it around. Some Reds notes. Spencer Steer tied for the major league lead with 15 RBIs. Also just sitting fourth in batting average, second in on-base percentage, and fourth in OPS. Ellie De La Cruz, he's now tied for second in MLB with 13 runs scored and tied for second with six stolen bases. One interesting note on Nick Martini, he was actually born and raised in Crystal Lake, Illinois. That's 45 miles northwest of Chicago. He grew up a Cubs fan, but he actually recorded his first MLB hit at Guaranteed Rate Field. That's the White Sox field when he was with the A's back in 2018. So a little bit of some history there for Nick Martini. All right, a little bit more on Friday night's starting pitching matchup. We'll preview the other games on our podcast the next 2 days. But for the White Sox, it'll be Chris Flexen. This was originally a 14th round pick of the Mets. Kind of bounced up and down from 2017 to 2019 between the minors and the Mets. Went over to the KBO and really credited the KBO with kind of saving his career. They were the only baseball that was had a full season in 2020. Said it was a great experience from him. Said he learned a lot. And then he came back over to the Mariners. He was really good for 2 years, 2022 to 2023. He had an ERA of 3.66. But last year, it really went south for him in a hurry. ERA nearly of near 7 last year. So he's looking for a reclamation here with the White Sox, kind of trying to, I guess, get his career back on track. He's only faced the Reds once. It was all the way back in 2017. He gave up 7 runs over 4 2/3. It was actually just the 7th start of his major league career. Scott Schebler hit a home run in that game against Flexen. The active Reds against Flexen, Candelario is 3-for-4. Espinal is 1-for-6. For the Reds, it'll be Andrew Abbott looking to build off of a pretty strong start to the season. He's never faced the White Sox. Only two batters on the White Sox have faced him before. Paul DeJong is 0-for-4, and Martin Maldonado is 0-for-1. All right, well, thanks so much for listening today to Chatterbox Reds. Appreciate all of your support. If you haven't subscribed to Chatterbox Reds, make sure you do that right now wherever you listen to this podcast. Also, be sure to subscribe to Chatterbox Sports on YouTube, where we have post-game shows after every game. We'll be going live, I believe, about 9:40 will be the estimated time on Friday night. And then, of course, if you missed that, podcast will be up on early Saturday morning. If you could also leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen to this podcast, but more importantly, tell a Reds fan about Chatterbox Reds and have them check this out. All right, well, hope that you have a great Friday. Hope you have an even better weekend. We'll talk again soon. Go Reds.